Hi there. Today, Wendy and I are welcoming Chef Kyle Young to season two. Chef Kyle is the executive chef at the Cafe at the Inn here in Benicia, California, which is where we all live. He's had an incredible career learning by doing with no formal training or culinary school. He has been in kitchens from Bricks to Meadowood to the French Laundry. Most recently, he was the executive chef at Provisions in Vallejo, California. We'll be talking about apprenticeship, mentorship, how the hospitality industry is not one size fits all, and really trusting your heart to discover what it is that you're meant to be doing.
Hello, hello.
Hi, Wendy.
We're back with another episode of Transactional Love, and today we're here with Chef Kyle Young, who is the head chef at the Cafe at the Inn here in Benicia, and we all met 2 weeks ago.
About 2 weeks ago.
Over bottomless mimosas one afternoon in Benicia.
I've had the flower shop in town. I've met you a couple of different times. And then when you started hosting pop-ups at the Inn, I would see you more often and I've met the kids. Anyways, I know a lot about your story and who you are here in the community, but also want to learn more about where you've come from. I first learned about you when you were at Provisions, which is in Vallejo. It's a restaurant that's just its own magical little moment. So anyways, I won't fill in all of the blanks. I want to hear from you, but I'm excited to have you on today.
Yes, and cheers.
Yeah,
let's cheers. We're cheers. Enjoying a bottle from our last guest, Martin Reyes, who's a master of wine, and this bottle is from Provence. It's a lovely rosé.
Well,
what do we think?
Thank you for having me. It's good.
It's good?
It's really good.
From a chef, this matters. All wine is good to me. So yeah, let's dig in. Why don't we ground you in Benicia? Why Benicia? Why now in this moment?
There's a lot of reasons. I do have a history here. My kids go to school here. So that led to it. But the reason I ended up in Benicia was really when I was at Provisions, everybody who'd come from Benicia would go, you guys need to come and open a restaurant here. You need to open a restaurant
I
here.
Totally
we need this here. We need this here. And the owner of Provisions would be like, should we? I was like, I think so. Let's do it. And then when I did eventually leave Provisions, it was to do my own thing. I needed time to figure out what that meant. I checked out a few spaces and then I sent an email to info@BenishaBayInn. I said, hey, would you ever want to talk about a collaboration?
Beautiful.
And beginning of August, and we opened December 2nd. So we
August pulled off.
Yeah, wow. We opened a restaurant and
right ahead of the holidays.
Yeah.
During the holidays. Wow.
Yeah, we hired staff. We wrote a menu. We changed the name. We created wine lists.
And the timing was perfect because there was an opportunity for you to come in and make something happen very quickly and pretty seamlessly.
It was a blank canvas with all the infrastructure of what a cafe would be.
Exactly.
And then you bring it your soul.
Yeah. And I think the other part that made it easy was I knew what I wanted to do. I've worked for 22 years now, and so I know what my capabilities are, but I know what makes me the happiest, and it seems like the simpler I get with my food, that makes me happier, and I see that with the guests. And so I knew I wanted to do farm to table. Very simple for me to transition because I was already doing that. A lot of the staff chose to join me, and so we had already worked together. They knew what I expected. They knew what I wanted. They knew my philosophies. And so when we opened, it was, we're getting the band back together. Here we go. So.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So touch a bit on that philosophy because your social media, it does come through. You're very tied to the earth through your storytelling and ingredient focus. But for someone that doesn't have access to your social media or LinkedIn or any of the articles that you've been in, how do you describe what you do and your philosophy around food?
Oof. I think obsessive can get mentioned a lot. That's how I ended up in Napa Valley. I was in Tucson. I had hit that plateau, that ceiling where I was like, I don't know where I'm going. This is not what I want to do. I know there's a world out there, but I don't know what world that is. And I saw an episode of Top Chef and they were at a restaurant called Bricks in Napa. And I was like, that's what I want to do. Mm-hmm. I want to go work at a place with a garden. So I quit my job and I came to San Francisco for the first time, ended up in Napa and got a job at Bricks. That's what I knew. Getting to know the ingredients, the seasons. I wanted to grow my own food or I wanted to touch it just because I wanted to understand it. How do I not waste anything? And so that's just that obsessive mentality really drives everything I do now with the food, the farmers, the ingredients, everything.
Farmers market. I love that word obsessive because it is like a space where you have to be meticulous. So many details. Like from the service to the present, like in addition to the food, right? Just set aside the food. All of that experience, you have to be extremely meticulous of an experience. And I think you need obsession to do it well.
I also think that because where you're rooted in the food itself and how it's grown and the ingredients. And what you said earlier about pairing back to being the most simple, it really does allow that obsession to become something that is accessible for others to engage with. And I think that's what's interesting. And what I felt when we were all talking a couple of weeks ago was that a true kinship for how you think about the land and how you think about how everything you put into the garden is going to inform how it's received on the plate. I get stuck in this conversation between the art and the artist. And I think that you are working with people who are growing directly. They are part of this puzzle and it informs how it's received. Like the kids coming in for popsicles that are just one or two ingredients, right? I think that's really the magic, is that you can unlock true love for flavor if you aren't screwing around too much with it, right?
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. And I actually, there are a lot of times where I'll be plating something and I'll be like, do I need to add something to that? You know, from a guest perception, did I miss something? Should I do something else? But then I look and I see I have the perfect avocado. I have my bread custom made for us for an avocado toast. I hand cut red pearl onions. Then I pickle them. We pickle them ourselves. The radishes are grown in the garden. The flowers, everything's grown. I'm like, why would I want to add something when I have something that's perfect right now? And I'm not saying that my food is perfect. What I'm talking about is what Mother Nature or the farmers or my artisans or my staff have presented. Mm-hmm. We use the best olive oil. The eggs are from Napa, so it's, I don't need to add.
I'm not an artist, but artists, that's a lie. I think, struggle. I'm human, so I guess that makes me an artist. But it's a very messy, complex process to get to a place of simplicity, which is this very clean, simple, bare moment, but you have this pre-process. It's not any of that, right? It's actually complex and messy and too much. And I think your struggle to not add something, I think there's something to that, right? There's beauty in that.
I piggyback on that. So let's talk a little bit more about your pre-process and understand a little bit more about your story. So you moved from Tucson to Napa,
yep,
really?
Yep.
Arizona, that reflects your point of view. As you were talking, occurred to me that chefs, their stories tend to be chaptered with the kitchens that they're in.
Oh, absolutely.
What was your home kitchen like as a child and how did that inform all of that?
Funny story. There's two funny stories. One happened during COVID. One happened in high school. And everybody looks at me and they're like, how did this happen? So I never wanted to be a chef. I have zero food memories at all. My mom, during COVID, I was having dinner with her and she says, can I ask you something? And this is something that I've thought about a lot, but she's like, what did I cook for you for dinner? I was like, oh my God, I'm so glad you finally said that. I was like, obviously we didn't starve to death, but I remember Christmases, but like day-to-day dinner, I was like, I have no idea what we ate. And she's like, you didn't die. I was like, I know, we're here. But when it comes down to it, I wasn't tugging at grandma's apron. Sorry, I wanted to be a Marine. My stepdad got deployed and my mom's, before I could join, said, get a job. I got a job as a dishwasher. And just as it happens with so many chefs, that
I love that
one moment in time that, like, who knows where I could have been, but just my friend saying, I can get you a job as a dishwasher, turned into a prep cook, that turned into a line cook, to turn into 22 years later, I know this is what I want to do. And the other funny story is I took a class in high school my senior year, and I only got stuck in this class because I didn't take it very seriously, choosing my electives. And it was the only one. It was a cooking class. The weird part is I couldn't tell you the teacher's name or the name of the class or anything we cooked, the layout of the room, anything. But I remember the teacher telling me one day, you're not taking this seriously. And I looked at her in the face, serious as it could be. And I said, I will never be a chef. I never need to know any of this.
So it was the culture of the kitchen that drew you in. It wasn't the cooking itself. Because you were, as a dishwasher, that's when you were like, okay, this is what I want.
It is. I think it's simpler than that. When I first started coming in, I think it was the kitchen is a chaotic place. The kitchen is an aggressive place. But if you're someone like me, you find strength in that chaos because the chaos isn't aggressive towards you. We're all working as a team. Our end goal is to make sure that there's no more tickets hanging on the board. And all we need to do is get this done. And it's instant gratification. You know, I could never work in a tech business where my job is based on, okay, I have this, I'm starting here, and in a year, we're going to see the final product. I know my final product. Every time I walk in the dining room now, I know, I see it. I get to work with my team, and at the end of a night, back, especially in some of the busier kitchens I work in, we were just like, fuck. We're like, oh my God, how did that happen? And you just look at each other and you all give each other the same face. And I think that's really what started it out.
I think your personality, you know that about yourself because you were going to go join the military. You like that chaos in order to feel control. You get to tame it in right. the way that you see fit. And there are certain personalities that thrive in that environment. Not everybody can. A lot of people burn out really quickly because it can be so stressful. And the peaks and the valleys are both very high and very low.
Right. Very true.
I respect the lack of formal training because you didn't go to culinary school.
Did
you
not.
Learned by doing. And I think Wendy and I talk about this all the time, that not everybody's meant to be formally trained. There are a lot of times people are meant to be trained by experiencing. Talk a bit about that beginning part of your journey and how you learned by doing and watching and being mentored.
Yeah. First of all, I think mentorship is one of the most important aspects of any job. I was a terrible student. I wasn't good. And it wasn't because I wasn't smart or didn't care. It was just the sitting still.
Yeah.
Like I wanted to do something. I always say I used to want to be a creative. I always wanted to be an artist. Like the movies, the artists. I was like, God, that seems fun. I just want to do that. But I can't write. I can't paint. But I never thought of cooking as an art. So I never picked it up. And then, of course, here I am now. But yeah, when it was time for going to culinary school, we thought about it. And I said, no,
why?
I like to cook. I like to be in the kitchen. I learn a lot. And that's where staging comes into play. Like, I love staging.
Talk about what that means for someone who might not know that
word.
So
staging, it's a French word. Stagier is where you go work for free. You work for free. Sometimes for the long-term ones, especially in the old days, you're working for room and board and food. And you work 16 hours a day. You don't get paid. You're at the bottom of the totem pole, but there's no expectations. So you can be working on a project and stop and go look and see what the chef's doing and learn, like, why are you doing that way? And they're going to take the time to teach you because you're not getting paid. So that's the value.
It's apprenticeship.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I've done it at some of the best restaurants in the world and still every now and then offer people. I'm like, can I come stage? And they're like, you're too old.
We're not doing that. We don't have time for you.
And they know, they're like, they know me by name. They're like, no, Kyle, we're not doing that. I was like, man.
Keep your knife roll at home.
Exactly. But yeah, I think working, I learned the real way because there's culinary school way that I'm not knocking it. If you like to go to school and that's the way you learn, then I think you should definitely do that. For me, I probably would have failed out of culinary school.
Yeah.
Still been cooking.
It's funny because we talked about accreditation in the last one and how it matters to arrive at a certain place to just feel credible in your space. And this is the opposite of that.
This is one of those last industries I'm talking about cooking where your accreditation means nothing to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where did you work? Mm-hmm. It'll get you in the door, but it means nothing. For us, it's can you keep up, consistently keep up, and consistently do it the right way every single time and make sure that every single guest has the same experience. Like, I hate when it's like, it was good, it was bad, it was good, it was bad, it was good. I want everybody to consistently just have a smile on their face when they're at my restaurant.
Yeah, and have the passion they're feeling when you're there. Yeah. Going back to Wendy's question, you left Arizona at one point going through those experiences, those kitchens.
Yeah.
What was that moment? And what gave you that, this is what I'm going to chase?
Kind of embarrassing. One of my favorite shows back in the day, right around the same time, was Jamie Oliver at Home.
Sorry, I'm going to interrupt just because I think that's hilarious. I also love Jamie Oliver, and I just went to the library and picked up two cooking books because I'm going to go vegetarian.
Okay.
And I don't know how to cook that way.
It's recorded. We're going to come back to this anytime you crave a burger.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm going to be at McDonald's later today.
Getting it done before you switch.
So I picked up two books. I picked up this really beautiful book by this amazing chef who cooks from her garden and into her restaurants. She's worked at Greens, and I don't know her name. And then I picked up Jamie Oliver's vegetarian book, and I was like, God, I feel like such a poser.
That's the thing. I tell everybody this, and the first look I get, they're like, Jamie Oliver. I'm like, you know what?
But
You go do what he did.
And he makes it fun and accessible. Okay, yeah.
So anyway, it was like
validated.
You know, I was
you didn't want to share that, but Wendy just now validated. I'm like,
yeah, the shit my boy. Shout out to Jamie.
I love that show.
So I was working at a Westin La Paloma, which is a great. It's a beautiful hotel, but it's a corporate hotel food, and it's I was dying. But I didn't know why I was dying. I was just like, this is not, because again, I had never been to Napa. I'd never been to San Francisco. I had seen the French Laundry cookbook at a Barnes & Noble and looked at it and thought to myself, what in the hell is this? Where is this? I was like, I don't get it.
What about it made you think that?
Just the, again, the obsessiveness, the presentation, that you can feel the passion in it, the cleanliness. You saw that the kitchens were clean. You saw Thomas Keller and he's got that just an aura around him. And it's, there was something about that I wanted and I didn't know what it meant. I didn't know how, but I knew I wanted it. And Jamie Oliver's show, when they're just like in the show, he just goes in his backyard in London, just like, today we're going to cook a tomato. And he just pulls the tomatoes off the plant, cuts them up on a cutting board in the backyard, has a wood fire. I was like, that's cool. I was like, I saw the episode of Top Chef in Napa. I was like, that seems like a place I can do that. So here we go.
Got it.
And I did it.
I think there's a way, and I think that's the thing that we've been touching on in the last couple podcast episodes, is that when we show other people that they can go and do a thing, it allows people to think that they can go and do the thing themselves, whatever that thing is. So like you were saying how you can't draw and you can't paint and you can't do anything. That's literally how I got to flowers too. Like the exact same thing. I was in like design classes. I was trying to figure out like, maybe I could just be a color theorist. Like I literally
philosopher.
I thought about that. That was one of the, I was like, I don't know what that means either, but I was like, and I tried it. I was like, not happening.
So I was a philosophy major at Mills College. And I then dropped out and fell into flowers on accident because I was searching for what my art was. I come from painters. So
pictured you falling into flowers, literally.
I did too. I was like, oh, that's image.
It's like almost like this cushiony.
I almost just said, that's how I just fell into the kitchen. You just picture me like falling from a 10-story roof onto a stove, right. Be like, ow.
Right. It was not pretty, but it finds you. Sometimes the ways that it finds us are multiple paths are being crossed in order to create the knot that actually gets you to say, oh, I could do that too. Oh, I could be a florist, or oh, like I could be a master of wine. It allows you to see yourself doing whatever it is that you do. And I think that's really cool that you are inspired by seeing other people doing the thing.
Sure. When I was a dishwasher, I did not see myself being a career dishwasher. Let's just be clear about that. And I'm not knocking anybody who is, you know, the dishwasher, it's where it starts and ends is with the dishwasher. Prep cooking, I was like, this sucks, because the prep cook part, it's like, there's not that action. But it was when I was finally introduced to the line.
That's an industry term. So break that down a little bit. What does it mean to be a line cook? And that in terms of where that positions you within the team.
Yeah. So the way a kitchen's set up, it's called the brigade system. It's classic. It's old school French. Escoffier created it in the early 1900s. And it's very militaristic. And I think that's one of the other reasons I loved it so much, is there's a structure. Everybody has a job to do. It's very much like that. So you have the executive chef. He's in charge of everything. He's the guy who just manages. And then you have the chef de cuisines who are in the trenches. They're the ones dictating. They're the ones writing the schedules. They're the one ordering. They're the making sure that the line cooks have the tools that they need. And then the line cooks are the soldiers. Those are the guys who are on the front lines, seeing the tickets and cooking the food. And then you have the support team, which is like the prep cooks who are butchering meat, cutting potatoes or Brussels sprouts. And then you have the dishwasher who's there to clean it all up. And that's the most important job. If dirty plates, dirty glassware, then that's the guest perspective. So everything does really start with that support team. So you have to have support from the top and the bottom to make this work.
I love that. So we're leaving Arizona right now.
Arizona. Napa. Okay, yep. And I end up at Brick.
But you stage at one point at French. Your dream came true to experience French Laundry. What was that like? And take us to that moment.
It didn't suck. Honestly, it didn't suck. I had a lot of fun because, again, I love staging. And I was at that age where I wasn't young, but I wasn't old, so I could appreciate what I was doing there. I knew I wasn't getting paid, and I knew I wasn't going to work there. So I was just, like, taking it in. And at this point, I knew Thomas a little bit, and I knew Timothy Hollingsworth, who was the chef de cuisine there. And so I was, like, just watching, learning, and it really wasn't even the food I was looking at anymore. I've read the cookbook and I know the technique. I wanted to see the day to day. I wanted to see how they organize their thoughts. How does a kitchen like that stay so clean? And the obsessiveness. And I know Thomas Keller is the most obsessive person I've ever met. That's really what I was doing there. And then in the meantime, I'm like brunoising pine nuts and making them like the perfect little tiny squares.
Can you talk about the leadership style of Thomas Keller? Of course, obsessive, of course, visionary, genius.
The thing about Thomas Keller, he's about mentorship. That's what it is. He's obsessive about making sure that you have the tools. If you go in there and you work for him and he notices you don't have a good knife, he will go and he'll get one from the store, Finesse, or you're allowed to ask questions. There's a library of books you can choose from. He'll pay for scholarships. So if you want to be a sommelier, he'll pay for you to take classes at the sommelier level. That's how it works. And if you ask anybody who's ever worked for him in the higher, like the, you know, Grant Achatz or Timothy Hollingsworth, it's that mentorship. That's what he's known for. He gives you the tools. He won't give up on you. If you talk to him, he'll tell you, I've hired you. You're hired now. Now it's my job to mentor you. Even in my kitchen, we're doing simple food, but I can't just say, okay, here you are. Now cook my food. I have to show you how I want it done. I have to explain why it's done this way. And it might not make sense to you, but eventually it will make sense to you.
Yeah, I don't know the exact words that you just said, but it was he'll take care of you or something along those lines. And it feels like now you've staged at the French Laundry. So now you're representing the French Laundry for the rest of your career in a way.
In a small way, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think so.
I ended up getting to live across the street from Thomas Keller afterwards and then became a friend of his. My parents weren't really into this whole cooking thing, even after I was already doing it for a long time. And it wasn't until we lived across the street and we were walking with my daughter. She was maybe a year old at the time. We're walking next to the French Laundry Garden. Thomas Keller is doing the famous photo holding the chicken with Ann Liebertz.
Oh,
he
wow.
stopped the interview and was like, I'll be right back, and walked over. He's like, hey, Harper, and said hi to me. Oh. And then was like, hey, and introduced herself to my parents. And we walked away. My mom was like, wow, that was Thomas Keller. I was like, yeah.
And Annie Leibovitz also.
Yeah, I didn't meet her, but yeah.
No, I'm just like, wow. That's incredible.
Yeah.
And you do have a carrot story about your daughter since we're talking about Harper.
Yeah, carrots. Root veg. Every restaurant we worked at always had a garden. She learned to walk in the French Laundry Garden. My day started at the Meadowood Garden. That's where I would go and see what they had. And then we had gardens in our backyard. And so every morning, my daughter and I had this routine. We'd start in Yonville. We'd walk by the French Laundry Garden in her stroller. And then when we'd get there, the farmers would always give her a little carrots and radishes. And so I'd always bite the little tip off the carrot, the little stringy part, and then wipe the dirt off on my leg. And then as she grew, she would start doing that, where she'd take it back, bite it down, they'd be like, spit it out, wipe it, and eat it. And so I have carrots on my neck tattooed on me and because of that. Yeah.
So that was one of the questions that I wanted to ask is, tell us about one of your favorite tattoos. And I love that it just came up naturally.
That one, yeah. And then I think the other one is I have this stupid one on my wrist.
I'm going to describe it. So it's a skull with, is that a chef's hat?
It is a chef hat.
Okay. And behind it are two knives. They're chef's knives. They're just knives.
Classic chef
knives. They're just like tattoo artist knives.
Exactly.
Just like you told a tattoo artist, I want chef's knives, and they drew those.
I told them a lot of things. I was a little under the influence when I got the tattoo,
first of all. It's like a skull and crossbones.
Yeah.
But... And
I was a little tipsy when I got this.
Love that.
And I told
no them, regrets, right?
It was supposed to be like half the size. And I was like, I want it to be like this big, about a little bigger than a quarter. He's like, okay. And I wake up the next morning. I'm like, oh my God, that sucks. But then I was like, the reason I got I have to be good at this.
Oh my God.
Now I have to be a good chef or I'm an idiot.
When did you get that?
I was 20.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. So how many years after the first dishwashing job?
A year.
Oh my gosh. So the reason you're a chef is because of this stupid tattoo.
This tattoo did it all.
This is the big motivator of life.
I'm going to find that tattoo artist one day and be like, you.
Look, we've got letters going with the cooking school teacher in high school, right? The cooking class.
All the random tattoo artists.
That tattooed you while you were under the influence. Seems irresponsible.
It was Tucson. Yeah. Things are different.
Yeah,
there.
No, yeah. It's a little wild.
That's funny.
Wild West, literally.
I love that you brought up one that you see while you're cooking, because when you go to the cafe at the inn, you do see you cooking, which I love. You have an open kitchen, but you're too busy to engage. But I think knowing the story and seeing the tattoo, I feel like people will come and look for that tattoo while you're cooking.
It's there. Yeah. I'll show it to you. If you ask about the tattoo, I'll give you 10% off.
There you go. There's our discount code.
Exactly. I was like, there's our discount code for this episode.
That's amazing. Yeah. We got to tell Sarah. Okay. So you're learning, you're being mentored, you're working like countless hours
per day.
That's a hard life, right? With a family, with little ones.
It is.
You've had a lot of experiences in many kitchens. You started getting all this mentorship and experience by doing, not by formal training, which I think is a beautiful thing for a lot of people to hear. What was maybe a moment where you were feeling like I'm on the right track?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Said this to a lot of people before. I've hit major goals in life that I never even knew were goals. I'd have to say Meadowood was just being on the property at Meadowood, not just the grill, the restaurant. It's a special property being there. And there were days when I'd leave and I'm like, God damn it, I hate this place. I'm so tired. I'm so cranky. I'm mad at the world. And then I pull up the next day and you're just driving through. You're like, I'm so happy to be at work.
How did the fires affect you?
I think the fires affected me like they've affected a lot of people. I was in Tucson when it happened. My stepdad had a stroke during COVID, so I went back to help. And I remember my mom was like, God, like I come running downstairs. She's like, is that Meadowood? Like your Meadowood? And I look and I'm like, what are you? I was like, what are you watching? I was like, what is that real?
Yeah.
And it took me aback.
Really fast.
Yeah. There's a picture that my friend took of me. I was like, what? And again, there's so many other memories. And that's what's special about restaurants is it's not just memories for the guests. Like my daughter would go up there with us to paint cookies every Christmas and just the outreach that everybody posted. The
it's a home.
Yeah, all of the comments said the same thing. They're almost identical. I don't know really how to feel about this.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've said Meadowood was the happiest as a cook or chef that I've ever been. I learned a lot there. It was technique driven. It's a beautiful property, but there's something that is in the air at Meadowood, the yes philosophy. And that's where I really picked up on it. You don't say no. And in the hospitality world, that's a very important aspect of what we do. We're here to give an experience. And especially at Meadowood, like you're paying a lot of money for this experience. And so just the yes, yes, yes. But then the culture there is that yes. So every single person, again, from the top down, all meet in the middle. Everything is perfect. If you read reviews, they'll talk about how when they get back to the room, if they left their sunglasses on their nightstand, the housekeepers clean the lenses for you and then put them down. And it's like those little details. That's when you start to notice how important a detail is.
Right. It's home from start to finish, right? Every person that comes into that property, even as a person who works there, is held in this regard that they're all valuable and they all offer something that's special and unique, right? There's respect and the yes is happening, but it's not happening at a level that's taking advantage of anyone. It's saying yes, but how do we make that yes possible in a way that keeps you whole, right? Yeah. Because housekeeping doesn't have to do that, but they do it because they feel so good.
It's a pride. And I think the other really important thing I learned at Meadowood, and they don't teach this, I'm looking at the why is this working? Why is it working? And I think what I picked up is not every single guest is the same. If I go stay at a Marriott, it might be a beautiful Marriott. I can go stay at the Grand Marquis and it's got good views, but it's one size fits all. And hospitality is not a one size fits all world. And that's at Meadowood, they ask you questions when you call. What are you doing? Why are you here?
Yeah.
What are you celebrating? You're not celebrating anything. You just want to get away. Okay. Let's start catering to each person. And I think that's something I picked up on. So I try to do that at the cafe. We're doing breakfast and lunch in Benicia.
Soon to be dinner.
And dinner.
Yes, cat's out of the bag. By the time this podcast is out, we'll be having dinner at the cafe.
Yeah. Actually, you guys are going to be eating our first dinner.
Yes. We're so excited.
So we're beyond.
Yeah. Very big.
And this will be out, released.
Yes.
Oh, man.
I know.
That's a lot of pressure.
We like magic.
We're going to have everybody magic. Showing up about tattoos.
But I don't think we orchestrated it. It just happened.
No.
The magic happened.
I was just talking to my new sous chef, Alan, today. He just started on Tuesday.
Welcome to the team, Alan.
He's the best. I have more cookbooks than any human being needs. And I think what I'm going to start doing is working through those cookbooks. So every week you'll get an appetizer, an entree and a dessert out of those cookbooks. So we probably are going to start with Anthony Bourdain's Layao cookbook, and then Julia Child, and then just go through and then letting my sous chef pick a month, do his favorite cookbooks.
Wendy and I, who live in town, we tend to want to support local, and there's only so many options, but I think rotating, whether it's seasonally or through a cookbook or different points of view, I think it's brilliant, especially for small towns where you maybe don't have a ton of options.
From a business standpoint, is a lot of people are starting to push back on how often I change my menu. April 4th, everything changes. We have table service. We're going to have paper menu. We're going to be serving liquor. It's going to be a lot of fun. But one of those things is we are officially now a what's in season.
Beautiful.
What kind of mood is Chef Kyle in?
I love
kind of
it.
Restaurant. So what you get this week, there might be things on the menu that we only have five orders of. I might be able to say I only grew enough for five of them.
I think FOMO is a very strong business strategy. And I will be there because I see you post like, okay, no, now
she
we're does.
She is. Like we were having a business meeting at one house and we're sitting there and she shows me the Instagram and she's like, I need, what was the drink?
It was a Bloody Mary. You posted a Bloody Mary. I was like, I need to have this right now.
I need, the FOMO is very real.
Hey, it is. Ours is,
oh,
we,
is it, that'll be there tomorrow.
Back to obsession. Our Bloody Mary is not just open up a can and do it.
Okay, so I want to go back to a word that you said when we weren't recording, actually, and you said the hospitality industry, it's a very selfish industry. Oh. It reminded me that in the last episode with Martin Reyes, who's a master of wine, we talked about the hospitality industry. We actually said it was a selfless industry.
Oh. It's a double-edged sword, and that is very true. It is a very selfless as well. It's selfish because
I see the connection, Norma.
I'm away all the time. We moved to Benicia. We moved into this beautiful house. It was 2 months until I saw what our house looked like in the daylight. It was dark when I left. It was dark when I got home. And that's just a small part. It's stressful. It's financially taxing. It's a hard job. It's selfish because it's selfless. Also, I give 110% of myself to my customer, my guests. Okay. Everything I do is for them.
I can echo, mirror, and understand in lots of different ways. When you own your own business or are dedicated to a passionate craft, it's really hard to leave it in any state of unfinish. And that passion that drives you to deliver for your clients, it's selfish in that it does feed you. Like, that feeds you, but it leaves you depleted for the rest of the people you absolutely
very much
care
so.
About.
Very much.
This kind of goes to like conversations I keep having over and over again here is that we're really worried about boxes and like keeping us in these boxes. And the conversation I had with my son last night while we were doing bath time, he was like, so you closed the flower shop. So you're doing yoga now. And I was like, yeah, I do still teach yoga. Yep. That's what I do also. And now I'm working for a wedding company.
I love that he's trying to figure it out.
He really wants to put me in a box. And my poor son, like, he's not going to be able to.
My new thing is like, oh, what are you? And I tell people,
what are you saying?
I'm a nurturer.
Oh, I love that.
And they're like, what does that?
Oh, I love that.
So the thing I'll say is that I threw the salon for the first time. At the flower shop. And the whole point was that you would show up and no one would know what you did. Like, I didn't put that on a badge. In fact, that was the only rule. I didn't want to hear who you were or what you thought you did. It's not, hi, I'm Wendy. I'm a florist. It's, hi, I'm Wendy. Let's get to know each other. And I think that saying that you're not self-identifying as anything or any persona allows other people to discover who you are as opposed to putting you in the box of what they already think they know about a chef.
I think when I met somebody at your salon that I found out is a teacher, it helped me understand him and say, oh, that's how you view the world. And I didn't care where you taught, what your title was, or how far along, or what your education, or the resume. I cared of his lens, right? And that's why I care that you're a florist. Like, that's how I met you, is through your flowers. That's why I care that you're a chef. I think that matters to me, because it helps me say, oh, that's how he views the world. It's through food and farming and hospitality and all these things that come with the career, if that makes sense.
The introduction of I'm a nurturer allows us to have that conversation in a different way.
Thank you for that. I don't want to be the middleman here.
No, it's okay.
Typical middle child here. Just now I'm in the middle.
You're like, wait, am I the guest? Are you?
You're a middle child. How many?
I have a sister and a brother.
Okay. Brother, brothers.
Younger brother.
Yeah. Okay.
He's the golden child. He's the baby boy. And then my sister.
What's the age difference between?
3 years exactly on both.
Perfect. Okay, yeah. Good. Perfect middle.
But anyway, so.
Yeah, get back to your job.
I do agree because sometimes I hate hearing what people do for a living and I don't really care about hearing about it. But on the other side is I think I can't remember if it was one of those cheesy YouTube videos or a meme or a podcast, but somebody said, you know, why is it your job defines what you do? Like when someone says, what do you do? Your first response is to say, I'm in tech or I'm a chef. And I remember hearing that and I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then I start breaking it down in my head. I'm like, I am a chef. Like, what do I do for fun? I nurture people. I go to work because I enjoy what I do. And my job is not a typical 9-to-5 job. That's who you are as a person because you chose that industry. You chose to do that. So for whatever reason, it does define you as a person. I see both sides. I'm stepping
away. So let's go back to you because you said nurture. And I love this because before that, you kept saying hospitality, chef, cooking, all these things, right? And then it shifted to this very emotional relationship, people-driven word that's powerful. So I work in the real estate hospitality space, and I've been really digging into hospitality. What does it mean? And it started in the nomadic culture centuries ago, mm-hmm. and people would welcome others into their homes, give them food and shelter. And then what was interesting about that time is that it was a culture of then expecting it in return. And it was really more of the host asking for hope and saying, I'm going to welcome you in first and give food, shelter, nurturing, environment, love, heart, passion, all these things, my home, which is the most sacred, our sanctuaries, right?
Sure.
Would give them first in hopes of receiving it in the future. And it blew my mind a bit because it's more for the host than it is for the guest. And when you're saying instant gratification, it's driving you and it's driving a lot of people out there that maybe don't fit in classrooms, don't fit in these formal environments, and maybe are chasing accreditations because they think they're supposed to. And I think it's so important to hear your story of feeling this fire. I'm sure people will be hearing and saying, I don't need to chase any of that. Right. Right.
I think it's almost, in my experience, I was going to be a lawyer. That was what I was going to be when I grew up. And letting life find me instead is what allowed me to open up in a different way to serving, right? It sounded like when you were telling us how you got to where you are, that this wasn't ever in your playbook.
Oh, never. Never. I look back and I'm like, I would have been a terrible Marine, really. I would have been good, but it's...
You would have been in the kitchen.
Yeah, but when I look back, I'm like, this is what I was meant to be.
When you finally were like, oh, this is it. And then connect that to the cafe at the end, because up until that moment, you've been working for other people, on other people's teams.
Sure.
Something gave you the courage to say it's now Chef Kyle Young's moment.
Sure.
To lead his own team, what was that aha moment?
I think the aha moment was, as I was growing, I thought I knew what kind of restaurant I wanted to open. So I started working on it. And then when it didn't happen, I was like, thank God I didn't do that. That wasn't me. And I didn't know who I was. I didn't know who I was as a chef. I didn't know who I was as a person, a cook, a human being, an adult, father, anything. I was still trying to figure it out. But I was like just trying to do something that I was doing then.
Finessing.
Good. There you go. It wasn't until up until COVID for the 3 years, I was consulting. I was working at wineries. I was consulting for restaurants. And then I was doing pop-ups. And the pop-ups are really where I started realizing that, like, maybe I'm more of a people person than I thought I was. Like, at first, I didn't think I was, but people kept coming back. And I think that's where the hospitality part, like you were talking about, comes in. That's my transaction. That's what I want. I'm going to get to know you. I'm going to know you when you come in. I'm going to know what you like, because that's what I want to do. That is what makes me feel good. That's why we give kids popsicles. That's why we go above and beyond to do these small little gestures with the hope that you pay your bill and then you want to come back. Yes, it's a business. I need to get paid. But I also want to see your face. I enjoy seeing the same people come in. I like knowing you. I like getting to know your kids. I like seeing your kids grow up. That's some of my best regulars come in with their kid every day.
Yeah.
And they bring their kids, and the kids know what they're going to get. They know that they're welcome there. I want to get to know the family. And I want everybody to know that everything that we do is, it's good, it's wholesome, it's fun, it's quirky, and we cater to each and every person because every single person is different.
I do agree with everything you just said, and it's not about luxury or like this white cloth fine dining.
Oh, absolutely. No, not at all.
It's the opposite of that. And I think what makes it special is, so Will Goddard, I'm going to quote his book, and when he talks about hospitality being the art of giving people what they don't expect, just a mm-hmm. little bit more than they expect. And I think that's all it takes. It doesn't take a lot of effort to make people feel seen and heard and special. What got me is that the popsicles for the kids, I have a 3-year-old, and bringing him, I felt he was respected. He wasn't right. an afterthought. It was very much a part of the entire menu to respect what a child of his age would want.
Right.
The ingredients were just as beautiful as everything else on the menu. It wasn't saying your tastes aren't going to be up to par. It's saying, let's meet you where you are. Right. And exactly. I think that's hospitality.
Yeah. And we have, you know, a grilled cheese because yeah. we do offer it, and kids love grilled cheese. I don't see a need to put a whole different subcategory in our menu for kids because kids love cheeseburgers. Kids like avocado toast. That's, kids love that shit. I didn't even realize they liked it as much as they do. But I created the popsicle because I know what it's like to be a parent with little kids and go out to dinner or lunch and just try to have fun, and the kids are fussy. Here's a popsicle. The vibe of the restaurant, what I wanted it to be, the first words out of my mouth is, I want to see families on the patio. I want to see dogs. I want people out there. I want them to not ever feel like they're being rushed. I don't like ever want them to feel like, okay, you ordered your food, you ordered your wine, now you have to leave.
I remember reading that, staying without purpose. Like, I don't have anywhere to be, nothing to do, and I feel welcome to just be here because a lot of restaurants want to turn tables. They want to get the check. They want to rush you out to get the next table, which I get. That's a business strategy. You want to get as many tables turned. But I do feel that at the cafe at the end. That I feel I can just stay without purpose and not just stay, and I feel like I'm outstaying my welcome, but also I'm actually welcome. We stayed after the closing time and we ended up having this beautiful conversation that inspired this podcast. But I think that it speaks to nurturing, right?
The nurturing isn't just in or through the food. It's through the experience. It's through those relationships that you build, that you're building not just a meal or a plate or a table. You're building a whole community, one serving at a time. And I think that is the magic that both Norm and I felt when we were there. And that's because of you, and it's because of Ona, and it's because of Tracy. And I think
Sarah.
And Sarah, that's a major part. Thank you for saying Sarah. Like, the people that work there are handpicked.
Yeah.
I would rather work a really tight ship staffing wise than have the wrong person.
Yeah. Like, Sarah, I'll just say she's the face of the cafe at the end at this moment, and she's the one who welcomes. You look back and Chef Kyle in the back, and but you're not welcoming people face to face. Sarah is the person mm-hmm. who to me stands for that hello, the host hello.
And Sarah is the she's beautiful, she's fun, she remembers your name. She's incredible. Never ever in a bad mood. She wants to be there.
Sarah followed you from Provisions.
She did.
And I think that those are the things that are true about you, is that you lead just like Thomas Keller does, by showing people that they're valuable and that they're worth investing in. And you share your philosophy and your perspective, and that brings and creates a community around you that ripples out your message.
Sarah is not the only one. Sarah joined me from Provisions. My sous chef, Alan, who just joined us, came with me from Provisions too. And it means a lot to me that they trusted this project. They trusted me. Not only did they trust enough in me and this project, but they were willing to take pay cuts, and they were willing to lose hours, but they believed in me enough because I told them, I'm handpicking you guys. I don't want to do it without you guys. And because I think that for me,
I don't want to do it without you.
It's I wouldn't do it. I need the cafe, and the way it's going right now would not work without Sarah. It wouldn't. The vibe, the way me and Sarah work together, the way me and Alan work together, if you take one of those pieces apart, then the trueness of what I think we're doing goes away. The hospitality industry is so complicated. There's so many moving parts. But knowing that this crew, this team, is what this is all really all about, it's for like me.
You guys all have this shared vision of what you're creating. Right. Yeah,
they're not working for you. You're building together.
Yeah, this isn't my restaurant. If I have a question, I go to Sarah. I'm like, hey, What should we do? How do you want to make this work?
Okay, sorry, this is a big question. Is there a restaurant that is your restaurant that isn't yours, sans your team, but like your perspective that's just like, I am an astronaut in space and I need to go do this thing? Does that even exist?
I don't think so. Not for me. That's the thing. For me, I could be that guy who's, we're going to do it this way. And my way is the highway, and we're only going to drink the wines that I want to drink, and this is what I want, and this is how it's going to be, and that could be successful. We're going to do a soft opening, and it's going to be extended, and it's going to go through December to April. And we're going to listen to the voices of everybody, mine, yours, the customers, the employees, and we're going to see what works. We're going to see what we figure out works, what the community wants, what the staff needs, and then in April, that's our real grand opening. That's when we're going to say, okay, this is what worked. This is what didn't work. Now we're going to give the community what they asked for. That's how this all started, was Benicia saying, you need to come here. So I said, okay, I'm here.
That shows a lot of respect, I think, is to be a learner before you become the name, the destination, or whatever it is, like just absorbing first. We want to sit and watch and listen and reflect you back in what's supposed to be the work, right? Because if we don't do that, then how arrogant is that? It just won't. Yeah.
I couldn't agree more. And again, a restaurant is, to me, this is my personal opinion. To me, I'm not going for Michelin stars. I'm not going for James Beard Awards. I just want to cook food, and I want to have fun, and I want to make people happy. This is not my restaurant.
Everything you just said comes through in the name. You're just a cafe at an inn in this beautiful town that's called Benicia. And has this history and these roots and this story. It has been told in some ways, but I think there's so much potential to tell more stories of Benicia. And I think you're just a vessel, right? Whether it's for your team, it's for the ingredient, Benicia, for this community.
For the community, yeah.
I ended up falling in love with the business and the community provisions. That's where I realized that I'm a community-based chef.
Community-based chef.
I don't know. I just came up with it.
Break that down a little.
I think for me, I've worked at some of the best. I've done more in my career. I've cooked for almost every artist who's gone through Bottle Rock. I've been on the culinary stage, and I've done all of these things. I worked at Meadowood. I was the chef de cuisine at Bartisono. For a while now, I'm Chef Kyle from Provisions, and vice versa. Because of the sense of community, we weren't just a restaurant. We gave back to the community. We had an open door policy. If you go to Provisions, there's no sign like no public restrooms. And that was because we were not going to be that restaurant. Now, if you're showing up acting like an asshole, we'd stop you. But if you're just needed a warm place or go to the bathroom, our bathroom was open. And then on top of that, we always sent them away with coffee, a sweet, and a savory hand pie.
Let's talk about what we're transacting on. The cafe at the end, it's this honest representation of everything around you, whether it's the ingredients, the town, your team. You are putting a lens, a community around you. And
I never saw it that way, but yes.
That's the identity I see. And the soft opening is ending. Mm-hmm. We're ending that chapter and we're opening a new one. What does that look like if you're listening and you're not in the Bay Area or anywhere near Benicia? You're in a beautiful, quaint inn, so you can fly in from anywhere and stay here.
You can definitely stay there.
It's a bed and breakfast.
Bed and breakfast.
And I cook the food for the bed and breakfast.
Thank God for that.
Beautiful. For room service.
You can get room service.
Benicia needs these little spaces where you can just be held so that way you can explore the greater Bay Area, right? Whether it's out to the city or out to Napa or even out to Sacramento or the mountains, it's a great place to stop and meet yourself either halfway or meet a friend. And the inn offers that landing spot where people can stay the night and ground themselves for a minute. And what you offer is that nourishment, that nurturing moment where people can have breakfast, lunch, and dinner with you starting in April. And that opportunity is what we are really excited to chat with you and express to our listeners, that it's not just a place to eat, it's a place to stay.
That's pretty accurate. And I think the thing is that when we hire people, it's not just who are you, why do you want a job, why do you want to work here? We don't ask normal questions in the interview process. It's not like, okay, your resume, oh, I sent it to you. Oh, I don't, okay, cool.
I didn't look at that.
I don't care. Who are you and what are you about? We have staff members who are 16. They only work 2 days a week, but I'm like, you know why I hired them? They started an after-school program for working with challenged kids, and now they offer a tutoring program for them, and that's why they come to work later than... I'm like, I need you at 12. I can't be there till 12:30. I have this thing. That's the kind of person I want to hire, because that is a nurturer. That's somebody who sees above themselves, and they, and at that age, hospitality, there's a book called Unconditional Hospitality, do small things to make a huge difference. And that's what I drive home to my staff. Poor Sarah. I send her videos on Instagram all day, every day. And I expect her to watch them, because it's like, it's hospitality.
This is training, and you,
it is,
you don't get out of it.
Yeah, it is, but it's these short clips on hospitality and why we do it. Just because sometimes we all need a reminder why we're here, because this job can suck the life out of you. But it's, that's what this whole process is I want everybody from Benicia to Fairfield, Napa, we have people who work in the wine business who now come down every Thursday for our wine tasting, because there is nothing like this in the Bay Area where you can come and sit and drink wine with the chef and have a advanced sommelier just pouring wine every Thursday.
Yeah. You're holding space, right?
We are holding space. Like, this space is open to the public. We don't take reservations, because you're always welcome. I don't need you to call and book a time. Like, show up and I will find this space for you. I will find time for you. I want you here. And it's everybody. Of course, I appreciate when people come in and spend money, because that's my livelihood. That's how I continue to buy the ingredients
and
pay my team. Yeah. I pay my team a very livable wage, because I think that gives back to their sense of belief. But also, I don't care if you come in and buy one of everything on the menu, or you're on a budget and you buy a side of toast and two eggs scrambled, you're going to get the same service at my restaurant. You're not going to be rushed out. I will refill your water as many times as you ask for it. Because you chose to come here and spend whatever amount of money you have. If you have a lot of money, you're spending here, and I appreciate that. And if you don't have a lot of money, what little money you do have, you chose to come to me, and you trusted me. And I have to honor that, and I have to treat that as everybody is the same, because everybody's important, and everybody looks at a dollar the same way. Some people just have more of it, and I have to honor that. So I don't care if you come in and drink a cup of coffee and then sit all day, I will refill your water and I will have a conversation with you, because that is what's important. And I think that's what the world is missing right now.
100% agree. I think as consumers, if we can just be more mindful, just shift our mind, especially with Amazon, with DoorDash, because they're easy and you can click a button. Mm-hmm. If for a second I can think this decision is impacting somebody that's real and human in my community, and they represent who I am because they live here.
Yeah. And going back to that, like the florist, everything we have, when you go into a Walmart, even the food is pretty much shelf stable. It's all made in that big corporate world to be shelf stable. Come into my restaurant, everything I have, it needs to go now. Like my lettuces, everything I do is very fresh, has a shelf life. Everything we use is alive. It's a living, breathing thing. It doesn't have a lot of time on its hands. So buy it while it's still
at
peak of what it is.
Today, as I was leaving to come do this, I looked at my kitchen table, because that's where my flower shop is now, and it was empty. And that was the most liberating and beautiful thing ever, because I bought exactly what I needed for exactly what I was going to do. And that's the win. Those are the moments where I'm like, I know what I'm doing, and I know what I'm doing is right, and I know what I'm doing is good. But at the same time, creating a space for the public to enjoy is at a cost.
It sure is. And going back to what you just said, you know what you're doing is good. You believe in it. And that's one of the best advice I ever got from anybody was, do you believe in yourself? And I said, not really. But they're like, do you believe in your business plan? Do you believe in yourself as a chef? I was like, oh, absolutely. And do you believe it enough to lose everything? And I had to think about it, because I was like, what is that? Right. When you say everything, what does that mean? Because if you say no, then you don't believe in yourself. Then your idea isn't worth going into business for. Mm. Like if you say no, I'm not willing to lose everything because I don't believe in it, then you shouldn't do it. Because there's, and I was like, shit.
And it's messy and hard.
And there are moments with this, just with the cafe where I'm like, why is it so slow? And there are times where I start looking at what I'm doing, just talking out loud and going through my head. I'm like, okay, I can dumb this down. I could maybe do this. I could do this. I can't do that. Then this isn't worth it. When I started this project, I told myself and my partners what we were doing, my staff and the community. I was like, this is what this restaurant's going to be. And the minute I start making little backward steps, then it's not worth it anymore.
I love that. Let's end on that. All right. We're going to cheers to nurturing and being obsessive.
Pretty much. Thank you for having me.
We've loved it. And we're all a little tipsy on a Friday night. We'll see where this goes.
This is Wendy and Norma. We love hearing from you, your comments, your likes, your stars, all of the things really resonate with us. Find us on Patreon for more exclusive episodes, early access, and community content. This is Wendy and Norma inviting you to transact with love.